Yeah, hey everyone, Brian Newbert here from GoldenBlack.com, live in his car. Once again, for the last time this season, driving up I-65 North, this time following Purdue's overtime loss to North Texas in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Sorry, I don't have a box score. I don't even remember the score, 78-69, something like that. Anyway, Purdue lost in overtime to North Texas. You all know this already. This is your Golden Black Radio Express post-game podcast brought to you by Fox Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the East End Grill, Charter Steam Remaxability Plus, JFQ Lending, and Gridiron Metalworks. Obviously not the way Purdue wanted this to end. Obviously not the way anyone wanted this to end who has any stake in Purdue basketball whatsoever. You know, when you look at the last year, I mean, everything has been so positive about Purdue basketball, from results on the floor this year when, you know, they weren't supposed to be any good, to, you know, some of the things that happened in recruiting, to just everything, people feeling generally good about things. And, you know, this was a tough pill to swallow because, you know, they had been, this season had been so exciting for a lot of people, and Purdue was much better and much more advanced than I think a lot of people, you know, expected from them. And as soon as fans came back, I'm not suggesting causation here, but as soon as fans came back, you know, to be excited, Purdue didn't win another game. The Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament both concluded with eerily similar overtime losses, which made for a pretty interesting end of this season on top of a really, you know, maddening one for Purdue. You know, I thought Purdue came out of the Ohio State game with real red flags. I think people thought I was too negative after that game, but I thought that what happened to them defensively in that first half, credit to them for getting back in the game in the second half for sure, but what happened to them defensively in the first half felt to me like a team that had probably been overachieving at that end of the floor quite a bit. This season, maybe things, you know, evening out a little bit for them. I don't know if that makes any sense. And then when they got into the overtime at Ohio State, and it just looked like an entirely different team than the one that had all the momentum at the end of the game, that was just another real red flag. I'm not even sure how that happens. You know, the team that normally rallies to tie it up, I know people think sometimes you expend too much energy getting back in the game and then you have anything left. But my experience with that has always been covering games that unfold that way, that the team with the momentum typically carries it with them into overtime, and the team that just lost a big lead, had the game won, and then, you know, had to fight to get it back, typically that team loses a little bit. And it was the exact opposite in both of these games. And, you know, I think all of this combined speaks to just how far Purdue still has to go. You know, all season long, I kept looking for, like, the smoke and mirrors that Purdue might have been using, and I never found them, but I kept expecting them, you know, to come out and play like a young team and look like a young team, and they never really did. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, you expect a certain level of unevenness, of inconsistency and all that stuff from young teams. And I'm not suggesting whatsoever that Purdue was the exact same team, you know, game to game, every time out, the exact same team from every half, every possession, whatever it may be. They were a little bit all over the place in a variety of ways. But they never stunk. They never came out and just stunk. And, you know, I kind of figured coming into this season, I think it was a reasonable expectation that, you know, they would be great a lot. They would be good sometime in between. And then every now and then they would just not show up. Because that's typically, you know, that's what happens, you know, in college basketball with teams as young as Purdue is. And when you factor in the messed up offseason and all the questions Purdue came out of last season with, you know, leadership being one of them, that just stood to reason to suggest that Purdue would be all over the place. But they weren't, really. And then, you know, at the end of the season, I don't know what all went into this, but, you know, they weren't very good in the first halves. They figured it out in the second half. And then, you know, the overtimes are just a completely different team. And it was the same, exact same thing, two games in a row. And I don't really know how to make sense of that. This is a rare opportunity I've had to actually drive for a while to think about things before I say them or write them, which, you know, is probably usually a very good idea, but, you know, the nature of my job doesn't always afford me that luxury. thank you to the NCAA, I guess, for kicking us out an hour after the game. I'm not complaining. I shouldn't complain when the tournament, you know, took place in the first place, and that was the most important part of it. But I'm just astonished there was not a media room to work in. But that's another podcast for another time that you won't listen to, nor should you, because it's pointless. You know, Purdue's got to grow into some stuff here. I think, you know, from a leadership perspective, you know, I thought Purdue was a lot better this year. I thought the juniors did a better job with the leadership. But I don't understand how, and a lot of people I'm sure will be right there with me, how you can have that much momentum, you know, coming out of a second half where you rallied to give yourself a chance to win a game you probably shouldn't have won. I want to add here, North Texas was the better team tonight. I think that's a really important point to make here. You know, were they the better team for the whole season? Of course not. But they were the better team tonight for sure. North Texas deserved to win this game, if you ask me. Had Purdue won it, I wouldn't say Purdue didn't deserve it, because Purdue would have done a whole lot. They would have moved a mountain to win that game. But this wasn't North Texas stealing this game from Purdue. North Texas was the better team, you know, for 45 minutes. Certainly the final five, certainly the first 20, for the second game in a row. But, you know, what I was talking about before I got sidetracked there was things Purdue's got to grow into here to be, you know, even better next season. And the future remains obviously very promising for Purdue. But it's hard to wrap your head around how a team can have that much momentum, you know, coming out of regulation and then look like an entirely different team in overtime, look like kind of a cold fish. And Painter actually said he sensed it, you know, for the Ohio State game, but he didn't say anything about it. And then he went out of his way to say something about it this time, and, you know, it was the exact same result. Purdue missed its first nine shots. They turned the ball over. They just did everything wrong in overtime again for the second game in a row. So Purdue, I don't know if that's a leadership issue. I don't know if that's an energy issue. You know, they talk all season long about having to provide your own energy with no fans in the arena. And all of a sudden when, you know, there were fans in the arena, you know, the energy went by the wayside at the worst possible time. And if you needed energy plays, like, I don't think you could have had more energy type plays than what Jaden Ivey and Trayvon Williams did on those pick six and ones that they scored in overtime to really give you a chance to win that game. The free throws, you know, really, really hurt you again. Purdue was 10 of 11 from the foul line before the final 4 minutes, and then Ivey and Trayvon Williams missed their N1 free throws. Isaiah Thompson, another great free throw shooter, or a very good free throw shooter at least, misses the front end of a 1-1. You go to overtime, one more point obviously decides this game in your favor. Now, who knows how it would have played out had one of those free throws gotten in, but that's two games in a row. Remember, Purdue missed like half its free throws against Ohio State. I think this is a team that's kind of, you know, still probably has to learn how to win a little bit. I know that sounds counterintuitive considering they just won a lot of games this year relative to, you know, the field. They were the 4 seed in the Big Ten. They won a lot of big games. They won big road games. They won a lot of tightly contested and hard-fought games. But clearly at the end of the year, you know, Purdue needed something that just wasn't there. And, you know, I think they got to maybe grow a little bit more into that. Maybe there was some smoke and mirrors here. Maybe Purdue was making things look a little bit better than they really were just by kind of finding a way every game. I don't know. And then they got exposed at the end. I have no idea. But I think Purdue's got to grow into that probably a little bit. They got to mature and grow up a little bit more as a team. That's perfectly natural. But I think Purdue changed the whole paradigm around this season by how good they were. So what we might have thought about things coming into the season are very different at the end. You know, Purdue legitimately, a lot of people thought, I thought, could have won a couple games in this tournament. But as Painter said, hey, you can beat anyone in this tournament, but anyone can beat you. And this was the classic example of just that. Because the other thing is, I think, again, you know, Purdue came into this year with really, really acute questions on defense. And I thought that was going to be a real problem for them all year long, that they were just going to have to outscore people. And they obviously had their moments where they weren't very good. The Rutgers game at Rutgers, you know, comes to mind. But right after that game, you know, all season long, they weren't great, but they were good enough. I thought they did a good job schematically. I thought they did a good job preparation-wise, coaching-wise, creating a structure where, you know, five guys who are average defenders, or four guys who are average defenders and one legitimate defender on the floor more often than not, you know, were something better than they should have been. And I thought, you know, they overachieved a little bit in that sense. I thought the coaches did a good job. I thought the players did a good job executing and all of that stuff, helping one another and not really allowing themselves to be exposed to their weaknesses. And I think what you've seen, the Ohio State game was the perfect example of exactly how Purdue had to be cohesive as a unit, because when they weren't, they got lit up. And then today, tonight, I think North Texas, whenever you're listening to this, I should say, during the game, I thought North Texas, you know, did a really good job kind of, divide and conquer. They really worked Purdue into some difficult matchups. Purdue didn't really have a lot of answers there. And they reminded me of the end of the Rutgers game in West Lafayette last year, where they were basically running offense for whoever Nojel Eastern wasn't guarding. They were making sure they got him off the ball by switching or whatever, and they'd get, you know, whoever it might have been, Sasha Stefanovic or somebody out in space, and they would go and make a play. And in this game, you know, Sasha Stefanovic, I barely played in the second half, if you played at all. I don't remember. Isaiah Thompson started the second half. I don't remember if Stefanovic came in or not. But it was one of those deals where the matchups were just really not in Purdue's favor. And North Texas did a really good job exploiting that. And, you know, they have a guard-type four-man who created a lot of problems for Mason Gillis and Aaron Wheeler with his skill. And you just come out of a long Big Ten season, and you don't see that all the time. That's like non-conference ball. So what I was always talking about how things getting easier for Big Ten teams once they get away from each other, well, I probably had it wrong, because it can get a lot harder, too, because all of a sudden you're playing different styles that you're not used to, you're not conditioned to thrive against, and North Texas did a really good job, you know, exploiting that. And, you know, on top of all of this I'm talking about, Purdue got buzzsawed 3, too. And that's what it comes down to. It comes down to oftentimes just making shots. And North Texas made a ton of threes. That's not, you know, an outlier deal. They're a good three-point shooting team. But the problem there was that Purdue just couldn't stay in front of the ball. They couldn't contain the dribble enough to keep North Texas from getting those driving kick threes, those wide-open rhythm threes, and all of that stuff. And that just comes down to dribble containment. That's why Purdue's whole defense is built on help and protection of the paint and all of that stuff. And it crumbled on them tonight. And, you know, perhaps it was a house of cards all season long and just waiting to come down. And it came down at the wrong time. I don't know. But I think Purdue has been much better defensively this season than it was in the postseason, and that's a big part of the reason Purdue's season's over. You know, I talked about North Texas making shots, too, and, you know, that's the other thing Purdue's got to get fixed here, is that this is I think objectively speaking, I think Purdue is a skilled shooting team. I think they are a good shooting team. I don't even know what they shot tonight. Isaiah Thompson comes in and makes three threes for you off the bench. Stefanovic made one early. Jaden Ivey made a couple. But they're just, I don't think Purdue has been the shooting team. And the numbers obviously bear this out. So why I'm even saying this, I don't know. Purdue hasn't been the shooting team this season that Purdue's capable of being. They need to be next season because they need to get that ironed out. Because you have to, if they're going to put three guys on Trayvon Williams and Zach Edey, you know, Purdue has to make them pay. They have to force them out of that one way or another. And, you know, Purdue started the game. I can't even remember what the numbers were, but Purdue didn't make a two-point field goal until like 8.5 minutes into the game or something like that. Shot a lot of threes, but they made a couple. They were like 3 of 9 to start, I think, but that's way too many threes. Had you made a couple, or, you know, you would have forced them out of what you were doing. Or had you made a couple more all season long, they might not have done that in the first place, and things might have been much different. But Purdue's just got to get the three-point stuff straightened out. You know, I don't really know. I'm shocked, to be honest with you, that Eric Hunter shot the way he did this season from three-point range, the way he shot the ball, period. Everything I'd heard about him in the preseason was that he was, you know, Purdue's second best player at worst, that he was, it was kind of 1A to 1B with Trayvon Williams, with Jaden Ivey most likely to be there, right there with those guys at the end of the year. And I don't know if it was the knee injury or what, that couldn't have helped, but Eric Hunter just didn't shoot the ball as well as he's very much capable of. You know, Stefanovic wasn't the same player after COVID. Aaron Wheeler found his touch there for a while, but that went by the wayside for the postseason. You know, Mason Gillis shot a pretty good percentage, but he's not the guy you hinge your three-point hopes on. Speaking of Aaron Wheeler, I thought, you know, Purdue had a lot of opportunities, you know, to make that kind of run. And, you know, there was the go-ahead three there he had from the corner. That corner was like the Bermuda Triangle for Purdue. And they set that out of bounds twice. They missed the three I'm about to talk about here. But Aaron Wheeler has a go-ahead three, and it's an air ball. And they just had so many opportunities to, you know, mount a run and not just lead, but build a lead and go up a couple of possessions and things like that. The free throws, obviously, I talked about earlier, where you're like 10 of 11 and then you miss your last three in regulation. Just all sorts of opportunities for Purdue. And maybe that's part of, you know, what they have to grow into here to be as good as everybody thinks they can be. And they, you know, objectively speaking, can be, is making the right play at the right time. I mean, they've done that. They did that at Michigan State. They did it at Ohio State. But when it mattered most, that wasn't sustainable. Whether that was the stage, whether that was something having to do with the gravity of the postseason, I have no idea. I couldn't even venture a guess, but Purdue has a few months now to think about it. I don't think losing today, you know, changes anything for how good Purdue can be moving forward. What I think this season has changed is, you know, how long you're going to have this core together. You know, I don't think Purdue's going to lose any key players this offseason. I think everybody's going to lose transfers. But I don't think Purdue is going to lose anybody who takes you from this many wins to this many wins next year. They certainly didn't last year when they lost their two oldest players. But, you know, how long are you going to keep this core together? Look, we're going to be sitting here in 12 months, and we're going to be asking very different questions about Jaden Ivey than we're asking right now. Because that guy is a monster. That kid is absolutely special. He is a star already. And, you know, there's no guarantee you're going to have him, you know, long-term at Purdue. So next year is a big season here. You're going to have him back. You know, you're going to have Trayvon Williams back. You know, Mason Gillis, Brandon Newman are going to be better players. You have to get Ethan Morton on the floor. You're going to have a senior class, you know, for the first time in – or a robust senior class, I should say, all due respect to Evan Boudreau and Jahad Proctor last year. You're going to have a lot going for you next year. You're going to be, you know, what this loss might do is this might temper things a little bit externally. People are going to, instead of putting Purdue in the top 10, they might put Purdue in the top 20, but they're still going to be top 20. And depending on how the Big Ten, you know, shakes out from an NBA decision perspective and all of that stuff, the transfer era, how it affects the Big Ten. You know, Purdue might be the preseason favorite in the Big Ten next year. If Io goes, if Kofi Coburn goes, if Michigan loses Dickinson, how, whatever it may be, there's decisions all over the place. Purdue might be the favorite in the Big Ten next year, and if they are, I don't think anyone would argue with that one bit, because Purdue was really good this year. They have everybody coming back, presumably. They might have the best player in the Big Ten next year. Again, depending on NBA decisions in Jaden Ivey. Trayvon Williams is a returning first-team All-Big Ten guy, and the future is very bright. But the future, or the present right now, isn't quite as bright as it has been most of this season, because this was obviously a very, very disappointing loss for Purdue. So I'm going to leave it at that. I just got off my exit from the interstate. Just want to say thank you to everyone this season for listening to these things. I don't know why you do, but your passion and your enthusiasm is appreciated. I appreciate everyone, you know, reading our stuff at goldenblack.com, watching our TV shows, whatever it might be. You know, thank you so much for your support. And if you've not yet become a member of goldenblack.com, this is my opportunity to throw in the cheap plug here. So if you're diehard enough to listen to these things every week after every game, I think our website would be right up your alley. So go check us out if you could. And also make sure you keep in mind our wonderful, wonderful sponsors, the Falls Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the East End Grill, Charters Team Remax Ability Plus, JFQ Lending, and Gridiron Metalworks. They're all wonderful people with wonderful businesses, and they deserve your support, I promise you. So for the last time this season, thank you so much, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you somewhere about something at some time. So thanks a lot, everybody. Take care.